Is going to start, is that right?
No,
Jim. No, Jim's going to start. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I'm a compulsive reader, and I'm Jim, and still happy to be here. And let's see, what we were going to do is finish off our group sessions, and I think we're ready for group number four. We left off with three, so number four, which was on sponsorship. If you have a rep, come on up. There he is.
Hi, I'm Vincent. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I am representing group four, and we focused or tried to on sponsorship. And I wrote just a whole bunch of little jots. They're more like bullet points. As most of you know, I've only been in OA for 2 months. There's nothing that I'm going to tell you right now, read you right now from my list that came out of my mouth. Here we go. I hope it hangs together somewhat. Okay, sponsorship. It was first realized that it's a tool. Sponsorship is a tool. It keeps you abstinent. If you're willing, you will find people to take you through the steps. The 30 Westminster questions was suggested as a wonderful list of guidelines to use, and that's one. And along with the Maroon workbook. I have not seen. I have a copy of the Maroon workbook. I have not really looked at it yet. I use a similar workbook in another program that I adore. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. And having spent 35 years as a psychotherapist and social worker, I've read a lot of these kinds of things before. And I just think that workbook is wonderful. If the Maroon one is half as good, it's a great gift. It was mentioned that there's no rush, and that's a valuable point to relate to sponsees, is that there is no rush. Some do's and don'ts. Do a food diary. Diary is my word, so I hope it's not inappropriate. Become familiar with your food triggers. Get your sponsees to call you first before they go out, before they relapse. One person who has obviously a good deal of time and has had a significant number of sponsees along the way has mentioned that to his sponsors, he says, I'll never tell you you can't, but call me first. Somebody asked a question about frequency of contact between sponsor and sponsee, the following comments ensued. In the beginning, try to do it on a daily basis. The sponsee should be encouraged to make outreach calls. It's also encouraged to use a same-sex sponsor. That doesn't work for me. I'm gay. Sorry. Follow a food plan. Know that your needs change as you go along. And don't obsess over food. Don't turn your sponsor into your dad. That's my favorite one. Write about it. Do your steps. When feeling in need, up your meetings. And I guess for sponsors, I'm sorry, that translates to not being afraid to gently guide your sponsees to take up more meetings when they're feeling iffy. Develop boundaries. The last thing that I want to mention is Ron, you in particular, had the goodness to mention who's one of the first steps? Mention these following categories. When I asked the question about the difference between a food sponsor and a STEP sponsor, Ron mentioned three things in reference to the program: mission, strategy, and action. The mission being to obtain abstinence, the strategy being to define what abstinence is to the sponsee, i.e., I have to learn to define what abstinence means to me. And tactics, it's a food plan, planned in advance. So I want to repeat those again: mission, strategy, and tactics. Did we get this right?
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you. By the way, I don't know if anybody here needs a sponsor. Does anybody here need a sponsor or is without a sponsor? Why don't you get with me or Rex after the meeting and we'll get you hooked up. Okay. I just want to say one thing about sponsorship. When I first started, I thought, hell, I don't want somebody prying into my private life and telling me what to do, you know. And I had a totally negative opinion of the whole thing. And I went for a while without a sponsor, and believe me, it didn't work at all. And when I finally got a sponsor and bonded with him and the program, that's when things really changed for me. And so, sponsorship just is really a critical part of recovery here. And I my attitude has changed dramatically in 14 years. I now would say to you that sponsorship is one of the greatest gifts I ever got from OA, to have that relationship with my sponsor. So don't miss it. Anyway, the next one is, let's see, where do we leave off here? Number five's next. And that's traditions. Okay.
Yep. Have to follow an Irish T-shirt
with an SC hat. My name's Steve.
Real tolerance, doesn't it?
We'll see later this season what happens. I'm taking bets. This season's our season. I'm Steve, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Steve.
Represent Group 5. We had meetings. And say right off the bat, there's a reason why meetings are one of the key essential tools. First of all, if you all know, okay, let's look at it for this way. Meetings can go from at least two different vantage points. From the point of view of a newcomer, they walk into a meeting, and if there's not a meeting there, or there's not some sort of recovery or something going on, how do they know what's going to happen? How do you know what OA is? So from that point of view, meetings are absolutely essential, you know. And, you know, one person leads in our group says, well, I don't go to OA meetings. I go to AA and whatever and all that, and is it that important? And, you know, they weren't saying it wasn't important. It's just that sometimes it's work to get to a meeting, you know, and it's sometimes hard to get out there. And you all know step zero, right? You know, basically go to any length to get what you want, okay? Well, getting to the meeting is a form of service, ultimately a huge form of service. So from the point of view of a newcomer, having a meeting is extremely important, and that's an ultimate form of service for us who have, you know, some experience and some experience, strength, and hope to share, is to be there at the meeting. Now, from the point of view of us who've had a little bit of recovery and a little bit of experience, strength, and hope to share, there's another whole point of view of it too, is the richness, the depth, the hope that we can get from simply sharing. Let's face it, it's a disease of isolation. I've been to many meetings where I've heard several people share that I know before. I've heard some of you before, and I've heard Rex share before. I've heard his story before, and it's totally different today. I know some of the details, and wait a minute, didn't sound like that before. And I wasn't asleep either, you know? I mean, the reality of this is that it's different depending on who I am at the time. It's different with the people that are around me. And I grow and I change depending on where I'm at. So it's really, really important to have a context from where you come from. The meetings provide that. There are obviously phone meetings. There's obviously different kinds of meetings. Now, another thing that's important is the meetings are unique within the context of OA. Each meeting is independent as long as they follow the guidelines, the traditions. So there are many types of meetings. Maybe many of them are speaker meetings, but my Sunday night meeting is unique in the respect that it's theoretically a how emphasis meeting, but we restrict to just reading one particular piece of paper and, you know, stress the reality of having a, you know, written food plan, three meals a day with nothing in between and so forth. But we have a devotion. We do a 5-minute reading and a meditation out of the For Today book, and then we do 10 minutes of writing, and then we share what we've written. It's the only meeting I know of on the West LA side where the writing is done, and I was lousy at writing when I was young, and I don't write enough. And this meeting really helps, and we have a small group that comes faithfully, and it's a very, very powerful meeting, and it's unique in that respect. So I've been to meetings where there's step studies, I've been to meetings where there's speakers, where there's sharing, there isn't sharing. The point is, these meetings, if they serve a purpose, they're alive and they're attended. And they're put together and they're followed, and as long as they follow the traditions, you know, so basically they live and they serve a purpose. And if we need a meeting, we go to a meeting. And sometimes we just choose the meeting because I need a meeting, what's available, okay? And other times I need a meeting for whatever purpose. So there's no doubt in my mind, there's no doubt in our group's mind, that meetings are extremely important. That's why they're one of the essential tools. Now, what about quality or the reason for us to do service? Dr. Bob, especially Bill, said when all else failed, working with another alcoholic would save the day. If nothing else, but just being there and giving back is our basic due, is our basic requirement. Just coming and attending the meeting, and if nothing else but filling a chair, gives people hope to see that there are people there. So meetings are essential for that purpose. I don't know how well to stress it. We talked about it. We talked about the quality of the meetings. A meeting can start in one particular time frame or another, and it can metamorphosize into other qualities too, depending on the group and how they believe, if they want to change it slightly and whatever. I have a men's meeting I go to on Wednesday night, and I very much appreciate it, but for the majority of the time the meetings have women in them, and usually the women predominate. One of my mentors out in Arizona, Harlan, basically says, I don't get it. Why does you have to have men's meetings? I don't have any men's meetings. What's the difference, you know? And what's the main thing, reason having a men's meeting, you know? He says, he didn't say it, but I said, well, the main reason for a meeting is to meet the chicks, right? No, not really. But, I mean, the reality of it all is that you go to the meeting for the experience, strength, and hope. And people who basically have it, you're there to listen for it, provide it, and to watch it grow. And so meetings are indispensable, and I don't know any way around it. We recommend in that one HOW group to do a minimum of 3 meetings a week. And I don't think you're damned if you only do 2 or 1 or miss a meeting. But when I first started, I had a sponsor that said, you'll do 90 meetings in 90 days. I said, what? 90 meetings, 90 days. What the hell is so wrong with that? And I says, I can't get 90 OA meetings in 90 days. There aren't that many. He says, 90 meetings, 12-step of some sort in 90 days. And it was like, well, any 12-step meeting. And I thought it was crazy, but in essence, what I found out was the story in NA, CA, AA, CODA, anything, all the stories basically after a week or so started to blend in. For instance, I never had a DUI driving down the road eating out of a pizza box or eating a dozen donuts and trying to ditch them in a dumpster in the back. I never got a DUI for that, but it wasn't the same as these guys drinking beer and getting DUIs. I just didn't get a ticket for it, but it was the same damn thing, okay? So I finally identified the addiction potential of the food, and I was saved because I saw, and I saw because I was told to do it, and I said yes. So I don't know what else to say. Meetings are an essential tool. That's why they are there, and that's why we decided y'all go to your meetings. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
As he was mentioning about step zero, when I was new, I first got my sponsor, Scott, and I was resistant to working the steps. And he always used to say to me, he said, "You're getting all the benefits of step none." So that's what started me on the steps. Anyway, let's see. Guest number six. Service. Yep.
Gabriel, compulsive overeater. Before I start, I'll say that Father Frank called me up. He wishes everyone the best. He's performing a huge wedding this weekend in Boston, regrets not being here, and said to pass this along. This men's retreat for him is a symbol of new beginnings. A lovely thought for everyone, huh? All right. So, topic for our team service. I remember getting the coffee commitment at Serenity Sunday. I told my sponsor, and he said, "Great, that's got to be good for at least 6 months of abstinence. Why is service slimming?" These are the responses from the group. "It gets us to meetings when we don't want to go. Someone needs to show up, open the building, provide the coffee, set up the chairs, whatever. It helps us maintain integrity, practice honor by way of making a commitment and then keeping it. Integrates us into community. We have to work together with others. We exchange phone numbers. It's a great springboard for a program call. Keep in mind that services work. Just like we go to work and get a paycheck, we do service and get recovery. Service gives us a meeting place, a building to go to, chairs to sit on, a building to sit under, etc., rents that are paid. I mean, think of the countless hours that went into booking this thing, right? Let's not forget, and this one I really like, that showing up abstinent may be the biggest form of service. To come to this men's retreat, for example, to hear that a number of multi-hundred pounders are not only abstinent, but at goal weight and maintaining the goal weight for many years and show up here year after year the same size. Talk about the ultimate hope, the ultimate inspiration, especially to fuel hope in the newcomer, right? Another great thought. Service by arriving abstinent to a meeting is saying thank you to God. Additionally, service at meetings sets the tone for service in our outside lives, service to family, service to employer, service to our communities. Keep in mind that we do what we can when we can. If we can't take a 6 month, 3 hour plus a week commitment, we can certainly come to a meeting, a retreat, pick up napkins around the trash can or empty cups around the room, etc. That covers it.
Okay. Any other comments or input on the committee stuff, group stuff? Okay, if not, we're going to have Rex get up here, and you're going to work on what step?
10 and 11, and I'm not sure about here tomorrow, but maybe I'll save 12 for tomorrow.
Okay. Well, anyway, that was great with the groups. I thought that went really well, so let's give the whole group a hand. That's great.
I'm a compulsive reader, and I got to say, of all the steps, 10, 11, and 12 are my favorite, because those are some that I get to practice on a daily basis. And I've heard people say before that they're the maintenance steps, and I don't like that definition. This is my definition, because I don't want to maintain what I have. I want to continue to grow spiritually. I can't live on yesterday's spiritual experience to take me into today. So I got to continuously develop a spiritual connection with my higher power. I want to backtrack a little bit and go back to step 8. And step 8 says, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Would anybody know what the most important word of step 8 is?
Became willing.
Good answers. But made a list of all. The word all. All persons we had harmed. Not the ones we want to make amends to, but to all people. And then I said before too, when we make our little cards, we put willing to make amends and not willing to make amends. And the not willing to make amends, we pray about this. So the great thing about this program, it offers us promises all throughout the whole program. It offers us promises in step 1, step 2, step 3, step 5 I read the other day. I mean, I think earlier today. And then step 9 has some promises too. And over here, so I'm going to read those. I'm going to backtrack a little. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness, and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We'll intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly. They'll always materialize if we work for them. Well, I'm going to tell you guys a secret. Maybe some of you guys know, and maybe some won't approve, but you can start working step 10, 11, and 12, even if you're on step 1 or 2 or 3. Because we're not going to hold on to resentments till we do another. So step 10 says, then the next paragraph says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So as we start this program, something that was suggested to me years ago, which I didn't start doing to this year, So I'm a slow learner, but, you know, it's been very beneficial to me. And it's to read pages 84 through 88 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous every morning, and I do that. Tomorrow I'm going to be leading the meditation, and I'll show what I do, how I do my meditation and prayer in the morning. For those who care to join me in the, I think it's 7:15. And so, step 10. So, we suggest we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. So what does that mean? I have entered the world of the Spirit. That means I'm not in fear. I'm not living with my resentments. So I'm free. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue. So our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. How can I be effective to God? This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. And it says here, so we don't get rid of our selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with another person and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance is our code. I can't say how many times I've actually done this, and this works. This works. This is a fact. The fact that I have a fear, I turn it over to God, I discuss it with somebody, and then I go help somebody, and that fear is completely gone. Whatever it is, it works. Whatever you're going through the day, you know, I turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And I think I shared earlier that, you know, turn my thoughts to someone I can help. It could mean that I'm in a Starbucks and I say hi to somebody. It could mean I compliment somebody. It could mean I'm walking down the streets and I pick up some trash because I get out of myself. Pick up some trash and throw it in the trash can. I love that. Love and tolerance is our code. Boy, that's a hard one to swallow, you know, for tolerance of everybody. The next paragraph says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. For this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in our alcoholic foods. If tempted, we recall from it as a hot flame. That's a pretty big promise there. We will react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards food has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. So God removes that. The food problem is not an issue anymore. We are neither fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality. Position of neutrality. Safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Really easy for me to do that. That's why I picked up in the last 6 months I've been doing my prayer meditation, reading pages 84 through 88. And now, like, sometimes I'm in a hurry. And lately I've been meditating. I set my alarm clock for 11 minutes. So I meditate for 11 minutes every morning. And sometimes I push it to the end and I have to cut it down to 7. I don't feel the same. You know, it's funny. Like, I have to cut it down because you know, I just have to leave out the door by then. But it's so important for me to read these pages and get that connection, you know. So here it is again. It's easy to let up on our spiritual program and action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do so, for food is a subtle foe. We're not cured of compulsive overeating. What we really have is a daily reprieve conditioned on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. So I like to turn this to my say, I can exercise my willpower along this line. All I wish is the proper use of the will. Much has already been said about receiving strength and inspiration and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. For him who has all knowledge and power, not me. If we have carefully followed directions, so the directions are, we continue to watch for selfishness, disarmament, resentment, and fear. We turn those over to God. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. So then we go into step 11. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. Does anybody have any questions on step 10? How to do a step 10? Yes. I'll get into that. Yeah. Thanks. So mostly in step 10, what we're doing is we continue to take personal inventory and set right any new mistakes as we go along. I used to believe that too. Well, I don't know. Maybe you have some information that I don't. But the evening review and the morning review is actually part of step 11. So step 11 suggests prayer meditation. We shouldn't be shy in this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. Better men than me are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. So here we get some pretty clear-cut instructions. It starts out, I do my 11th step. Well, here's the instructions for it. Usually I get to very late at night and I end up doing my retire in the morning along with my awakening. I don't suggest that, but that's what I've been doing. But I still work on it. So it says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. So these are questions we ask ourselves. Were we resentful? Yes, no. Was I selfish? Yes, no. Was I dishonest today? Or was I afraid today? Do I owe an apology today? Have I kept something to myself which I should have discussed with another person at once? Was I kind and loving towards all? What could I have done better today? Was I thinking of myself most of the time, or was I thinking of what I can do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or moral reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. So if I'm into worry, or drift into worry or remorse, I mean, if I'm drifting into worry, remorse, or moral reflection, I can ask God to remove that. And that's not selfish, because I'm not being very useful to God if I'm worrying about stuff. For that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making a review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Sometimes I overeat a little bit. I'm not perfect. So a lot of times that's what it comes. I overate a little bit last night, and I'm not talking about my binge foods, but sometimes I'll ask God for forgiveness in that. So I get to ask God, after making a review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So if I need to make an amends, call somebody, I do that. I got to say, like, a lot of times I can make an amends pretty quickly along. Now, if I have a resentment that's carrying on for hours or a day or two, step 10, I need to get a little more thorough. So, like, if I'm in a relationship stuff or some kind of resentment that really brings me up, I'll break out one of those resentment sheets that I gave to you guys earlier, which is very thorough, and it breaks it down. And when I get to do the whole sheet and look at my part of it, then I can get a clearer understanding. And this is, okay, so that's what I do for the evening review. And so next goes on awakening. These are clear-cut instructions. It doesn't say an hour after I wake up. It doesn't say in the afternoon. It says on awakening. Let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct my thinking. Okay, so sometimes I feel I'm kind of dense and I'm not too awake in the morning. So I journal in the morning too. So it's weird. I'm weird. But I actually write down, God, please direct my thinking today. I write that down every day. And then I write my plans for the day. And they usually don't turn out the way I want them to be sometimes. But then that's God's plan for me, not mine. So we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave me brains to use. So God gave me brains to use, as long as they're not for the wrong motives, or I'm not under fear or worry or resentment. It's so great to wake up in the morning and have no resentments or fears or whatsoever. You know, be clean. You know, I feel like every day I die when I go to sleep, and when I wake up in the morning, I'm a new person because I don't have to hang on to resentments or fears or worries anymore. You know, because I'm not in charge. So our thought life, my thought life. What is my thought life? What if my thought life is my reality? What I think about myself or what's going on? So my thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when my thinking is cleared of the wrong motives. Next, it gives us more instruction. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take here. I love this. This is so awesome. I never heard of a concept like this. We ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. This is a part I never heard before. We relax and take it easy. So like somebody said, I think Jim was talking about this earlier, where he said that, was it you, that you leave the worrying up to God, and your job is to do the action,
do the work. He does the worry.
Yeah, he does the worry. I love that. Yeah. So we relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answer comes after we've tried this for a while. What used to be a hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes the working part of the mind. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We may pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. So we conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful to never pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time in doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. And I can pray to win the lottery. It's not going to work. Yeah. If circumstances warrant, we ask. This is another paragraph that I really like because I it means a lot to me. I'll read it. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in a morning meditation. So we can actually ask our wives or friends to join us in a morning meditation. What a concept. I mean, have other people meditating with us. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principle we've just been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they have to offer. You know, it's funny because I, being an atheist most of my life or an agnostic, you know, I used to think that religious people were weak. But now I'm really starting to see that differently, you know. I'm really starting to see how strong they are. And my brother-in-law, he's like really, he's religious and he's a physician or whatever. But, you know, he does his devotion and all that. And I thought, you know, but I'm really starting to see after reading this for a long time how important that is. And and then again, this program is not a religious program whatsoever. But I like to that it does make a reference to see, be quick to see where religious people are right. You know, there's a lot of good things about, I don't like the word religious too much because I don't know much about religion, but I would say spiritual people are right. Or maybe that's the same concept. I don't know. Sorry. Buggy. My face. And make use of what they have to offer. Next it says, as we go through the day, we pause. When agitated or doubtful, we ask for the right thought or action. So as I go through the day, another gift of the program. See, because I'm a person that goes from 0 to 100 and, you know, I get cut off in the freeway and immediately I want to chase them down and run them off the freeway. Today, this is what a gift that I get to pause when agitated or doubtful. You know, those 5 seconds before making that quick response back when somebody annoys me or hurts my feelings, I can pause. What a gift. I never knew there was a pause. Usually I pause after I yelled at them and screamed at them and then realize that I made a mistake. But or cursed them out or whatever. That's when I paused after that. Like, and I realized now I really made things worse. So I can pause when agitated or doubtful. I get to ask for the right thought or action. I constantly remind myself I'm no longer running the show. Humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. I do not tire so easily, for I'm not burning up foolish energy as I did when I was trying to arrange life to suit myself. It really works. It really does. We compulsive overeaters are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we just outlined. But that's not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. I think I'm going to cover step 12 tomorrow. What else can I say about? So maybe 49, 25. Sorry, I was looking for something. You know, when it says again back in step 10, it says, we've rendered the world of the Spirit. What does that mean? That, again, that means I tried. It means that I dropped my judgments on people. As I said before, you know, I'm not in fear and I'm not holding on to resentments. That's how I enter the world of the Spirit, is when I'm connected with God the best that I can, or I'm cleared of all those things that have my connection faulty or a weak connection. When I drop my judgments, my fears, my resentments, I'm clear. I'm focused. I'm not in that. I'm not in myself anymore. So we have till 8:30, but maybe we can end a little early and go into questions. Or what's the next thing here? Kitchen sink and so being my first time up here, next we're going to go into at 8:30 kitchen sink question and answers. Is this all together or one? I don't know. So it says kitchen sink, comma. So does that go on now?
Right. We're just a little break probably.
Oh, how about we get a little break and come back at
8:35? 8:35.
Thanks.
Dave, compulsive reader. Let's reconvene with the good old serenity prayer. Have your indulgence, gentlemen. After a moment's silence, God, grants me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So when I'm at a big event like this, it reminds me of when I used to be a conference delegate for the intergroup. And we go to the World Service Conference in the 80s. We were fighting over the food plan almost every year, you know, until the lawyers came and told us we'd get sued if somebody died on the gray sheet, so we had to change it. And I remember some of the, I mean, our loving fellowship, you know, people yelling and screaming from the microphones. And the chair was Pat Rusek. She's passed away now. She's a wonderful lady. And she had such grace, and she would say, let's say the serenity prayer. I think that would be appropriate, you know, really quiet down. But we don't have that problem here. So now we're going to have the traditional kitchen sink and question and answer, ask it basket, call it what you may. I'll pass the basket around if you don't want to ask a question to some of the prior leaders or the current leaders. It's traditional that people that have led the retreat before, that would be Don and Rex, our current leaders, and Jim and Daryl. Who else do we have here that's, and Ron? Yes, would come and sit up here in the chief seats. These are people that have been chosen to lead the retreats in the past, and none of us are authorities, but there's a lot of experience here. And if you have a question about abstinence or anything, I'm sure we would be happy to respond, and you can write them down.
Put them in the basket if you want to.
I'm Ron Capasso, reader.
All right.
And because I have those red light, yellow light, green light foods, and so if it's a red light, you know, I'm not going to eat this because I know that it's an alcoholic food for me, and especially the quick reaction of sugar. I generally like to say, like, to make a little gulp or something made out of sugar cubes, you know, it's recreational sugar. The green light foods are ones like, you know, I'm never going to binge on Brussels sprouts, you know, so I can have some of those. And yellow light foods, most of the yellow light foods are really red light foods that I'm in denial about. So basically what I'm dealing with is, there are some times when I have a food that I think that it has been in my red light thing, and I may want to see if I can't try it again. But there are some that are definitely harder light foods, you know, like you know, candy bars and those kinds of things. But if it's a food that you know, maybe it was kind of borderline, you know, I might experiment with it. just for one shot deal. And if it says, like I said, if I can have a bite of it, you know, I can have one bite and leave it alone, it's probably, you know, safe to put it back in the yellow light area. If after one bite I'm climbing up the wall, that's when, you know, I know that, okay, now I got a really big action, and it's kind of like breaking out into the hives, you know, you itch and everything, you got to really, you know, call your sponsor right about it for all these things. On the other hand, there are also some yellow light foods or some other foods that have been okay, but suddenly sneak up on you, and all of a sudden, gee, I've been eating, you know, this particular food for quite a while, and suddenly I can't put it down anymore. And so when that happens, you know, over time I realize that, okay, that's now been incorporated into my alcoholic foods, and I've got to move it to the red light area and move along. So that's my experience. Anybody else? My second motion.
Yeah, I'm Daryl. And my number one binge food growing up and as an adult was bread. And I probably doubled or tripled the calorie the intake of any meal by the bread that was I would consume. And when I became abstinent, through no decision on my part, but it would be 3 years before I would have a piece of bread. And it was like there were a basket of rocks on the table. And I remember about a year into that, I had heard Judy Hollis say that if you can take it or leave it, you can have it, but if you have to have it, you can't. And so I was telling my ex-wife, we were still together then, I said, you know, Judy Hollis says that you can take it or leave it. I think I can take it or leave it. And she said, well, why don't you just leave it? And so I have to remember that. And there's a difference between having to have it, really. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. There's having to have it and can have it, you know. And just because I can have it doesn't mean I have to. And today, when I called my tutor this morning, my food was done, they were going to serve here, so I just told him what I wasn't going to eat, and bread was one of the things. So I had to bread or sugar. I don't know what else they have there, but yeah, I would assume that I would be able to make a reasonable choice. And that was the case.
What is the difference for you guys between a binge and a break in your abstinence?
Did I take a break? Well, getting back to that's a good question, and I like the question about the food plan too. I always think that you know, a food plan, you can call it whatever you want, it's a diet, let's face it. And diets don't work for people like us. That's exactly why we're here. So why does a food plan work? Well, it has to have spiritual content to it, number one. It separates the eating from the compulsive overeating. And you have to establish that line. And that was the question you had about it evolving. It does evolve. These mindsets, I can only speak for myself. I think the food plan was very important to me that I have that line. And I call it a spiritual boundary. That's what I call it. But I have to have that line. And when I was new, it probably wasn't exactly in the right place, but it's been refined as time has gone on. Some of you are sharing too. Sometimes things that I mean become uncomfortable. Something's uncomfortable here. It's time to take a look at it. And then I can either reduce it or eliminate it, depending on how uncomfortable it is. But my food plan, as I say, the way I get it spiritual content is that I number one, it's in black and white. It's written. It's in my desk, and I share it with my sponsor. And before it's final, and I also commit it to my higher power. So that gives it spiritual content. It's not a diet anymore. It's a spiritual tool to get abstinent. And that's exactly what a food plan is. And so when I'm ready, I have to tell you, over 14 years, I've made very minor adjustments to my food plan. It's remained pretty much generally the same as when I started. But I do make adjustments. But when I'm going to do it, before I do it, before I write it on that food plan and commit to it, I talk to my sponsor about it, what's bothering me, what's going on, and if we agree it needs to the food plan needs to be modified. Well, then it's written down, and then I commit it to my higher power, and that makes it a spirit, again, brings it into the spiritual realm. But the important thing is, I think after 14 years, I think these guys, probably a lot of people have been around here longer than I have, it becomes a very fine line. There's no really any gray area. You hear a lot of talk about that in OA, but I don't have any gray area. I either am or I'm not. And but that food plan gives me that line. It gives me, that boundary. And I step over it, and I'm over it. That's a good question to ask. If I go over it, I go out of that written food plan. That's a relapse, and there's no use soft pedaling it to anybody. That's a relapse. And so, at least that's my experience. And I'm sure maybe somebody else here has a better take on it.
I know for me, a binge is a planned and sustained eating orgy, and I might as well put up a sign over the door, abandon hope, all you enter here, that's what it turns out to be.
For Dave, I used to work on North Island Naval Air Station. I was on the third ship, and the guy, Walter, not the Walter, he worked in the cafeteria, and he had five kids, and he was a chef in the cafeteria from midnight to 8 in the morning. Then he went to work in the gas station, pump gas oil. And I used to fix his car at night and get it back and rip off batteries and all that stuff. In fact, I was making it. But the way he would pay me, he didn't have money to pay me, but he would make me food. I'm a big and I used to get it. He would say, "Look at that big sucker eat," like that, and he would make big platters of food for me. And then I would go back to the shop and get something out of the vending machine. And then 2 hours later, that was a binge to me. I would just keep eating and eating and eating. And I was at my wife in the morning. I was eating a huge breakfast. And I would say, "What's for dinner?" And then she said, "Well, we're having roast beef and veggies." I don't like that. So I didn't have the courage to tell her I didn't like that. It hurt her feelings. So I'd go through the drive-thru and eat, and then come home and eat what she made because I didn't want to hurt her feelings. And so I binged. I was binging. They told my son at the Alano Club, he said, I need to stop drinking. And so they bought him a 6-pack of beer, and he told me this, and set him out at the curb. He said, "Finish that. If you're finished with it, bring it back to us. If you're not, drink it, you'll be in hell." And he said it pissed him off, and he went back and said, "I don't want to drink this." And that's one of the times he got sober, And I think there's some creeds to that. I have suffered greatly by thinking I could eat frozen yogurt again. Somehow my ADA food plan went from an 8-ounce glass of non-fat milk to a frozen yogurt at go to the thrifty drugstore. Well, we'll just have it one day. And then we met the gal in there that served, and she found out we were in a 12-step program, and she was in AA. And so she was being really nice to us, and we couldn't put it in a cup. It wouldn't fit on anything. And the only way I've been able to let go of foods that I took back, that was a question, is to pray and ask God to remove them. And it happens automatically, just like I think Rex was saying, without any, effort on my part, by the grace of God, this obsession to eat these things is removed. I can force myself to beat the crap. I've done it, I got to stop eating bagels, God damn, And it just never worked. It just makes me eat more of them, But if I, like the leaders said, if I quiet myself down and have faith in that a power greater than myself can restore my sanity. When I came in the program, you can have all the coffee, tea, and low-calorie drinks you can, 3 meals a day, nothing in between, but all the coffee and tea you can drink and low-calorie drinks. So my sponsor and I, who was half my age, used to go down to the AMPM and get a 40. Now they made 64. We get the biggest sucker and eat and drink two of them and pee all day long. Son of a bitch, we needed that, you know, to get to the next meal, you know. And, you know, I haven't had a soda pop in 3 months, and I prayed about it. And I said, okay, it's yours. Like you say, shit, you're right. We gave it to God. That's it. It's yours. It's here in your hands. I'm letting it go. If you're going to take, anybody's going to take care of it, you are. And I've been offered one, and the whole thing, just like when I quit smoking, you know. My girlfriend says, you need to quit smoking. And I said, fuck you. Leave me alone. I slammed the door, and I came back and made a mess. I said, what I do? She says, why don't you work the steps on it? Oh, that. You know. Here we go. I haven't had a cigarette since 1981, you know. Thanks to Chris Keller, you know, God rest his soul. But people help me a lot with that, reminding me that I'm not the one that has the power. That's the difference, you know. I don't know.
I'm Don, compulsive over here.
Hi, Don.
I just wanted to say, I've been blessed to not have a lot of binging. In fact, binging was never too much, very much of a problem for me. It was just sneaking stuff here and there and having too many second helpings and just eating too much in general. The one binge I did have, it was when I was packing up to leave New York. I had two apartments, one of which was legally mine, and I'd moved out of the illegal one, and I'd moved a lot of stuff from a friend's garage, and so I was packing the stuff up with the movers to take from her garage, and she left me alone in her house. This was out in the burbs, and she said, oh, there's some cookies in the kitchen, you have some. So I went in and there was a bag of cookies, and it was one of those commercial kinds that we all know that has these bags of cookies. There's two columns of cookies about this high, or was it four columns of cookies? I don't know. There was quite a great number of them, and she said, no, open up the bag and have some. So I thought, well, let me see, how many could I have? Well, maybe I could have four and be a genteel type person, you know, not an unmannerly pig. Well, so then I went back to have a couple more. And I finished the bag that afternoon. And that was, then I really knew that I was binging. But that's quite a time before I came into the program. For me, the whole deal coming into the program was realizing that whatever it was you were doing, you all were maintaining a healthy weight, because I had gotten up to a weight that was my highest weight that I'd ever achieved. And so I thought, well, what I'm going to do, this was in 99 at Thanksgiving time. I had to go in, we were up at San Francisco for Thanksgiving, and I had to go into a store to buy the next larger pair of pants because I was choking. And I thought, well, when I go back to San Diego, I have to go on the mother of all diets. Now, I've been a great dieter all my life. I could been on dozens of diets, and I've all lost all kinds of weight, but I never weighed more than 205 pounds, and I now weigh 168, to give you an idea of what my size is. And so I really, and I'm also tall, which you can hang a lot of, as they say, you can hang a lot of ornaments on a big tree. And that's Leonard's. Leonard said that, but it's true. People never, oh, you're not so bad, you know. But I knew, and I said, okay, well, I'm going to go on the mother of all diets. Well, I made a pot of food that I was going to use for the whole week, and I finished it in 2 days. And I thought, you know what? There's only one person being fooled here. Only one. And so at that point, I came into OA, and I've not binged since then. I've occasionally gone a little over the line, but I like to think I have maintained my essence because I've maintained mindful eating. And sometimes my portions have gotten a bit, lately my portions have gotten a bit too big, and I started measuring them. I'm not obsessive about it, but I want to know, because I would rather, I have said this before, I'd rather stay food sober and that definition of sobriety that I got out of the dictionary, freedom from unreasonable excess. And that's how I try to eat, is by planning my menu. It isn't a diet, it's a menu. I get to eat all kinds of things. Some of the things I eat are not very big quantities of them, but I do eat a lot of things, and I basically avoid sugar, white flour, and grease. And once in a while, some sugar slips into things like ketchup and some things, you know, and some white flour may slip into something like whole wheat bread. But in general, I avoid these things, and I've managed to stay sane about the food and comfortable with what I'm eating. And I often think the measure of it would be, would I eat this in front of my sponsor? Think about that one. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
We also used to say plan your eats and eat.
Yeah, I also used to say, I had a wonderful AA sponsor once who used, and I was going to work and just going nuts with work, and he'd say, well, just plan your work and work your plan. And so I've modified that into plan your eats and eat your plan. Anyway, thanks.
Wait, did you say sugar, white flour, and grease?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, greasy deep fried stuff. I mean, you can't avoid grease altogether. But I avoid, I don't completely eliminate, can't.
What do you all say to the chronic relapser, the guy who's been here for 13 years and is still 300 pounds? What do you tell him? I speak for myself.
Keep coming back. Try and get today right. Just try. And the other thing that I learned from Dave, abstinence is not achieved, it's received. Dear God, let me plan a proper meal and let me stay with the plan. And if I'm at a buffet like over here, I mean, various of the stuff on that buffet was calling out to me, and I thought, you know what, I know what some of that stuff tastes like. I don't really need to have it. Or I'll have a small amount of this and a small amount of that are not red light foods. And I have a little taste of things, but I got to be really careful and look at that plate and look at how much I'm putting on there. And then it's also my option not to eat at all. That for me is new thinking. Believe me, my mother would never have allowed that.
Yeah, I want to ping off Dave compulsory, ping off something down. I've started the step study for me in 1999. It's still going. I'm so happy about it. I'm the founder. And then other people have taken it over and they're running it and everything, and I pop off every once in a while. Don't say who the founder is. Ooh, that's it. Right. That's a joke. But what I started it because I needed a step study to go to that was open, you know. And so I mean we've been through the AA 12 and 12 several times in all those years, and what popped out at me 3 or 4 years ago was how many times the author mentions grace. The grace of God has removed our obsession. And so I said, I'm like, Don, I'll look that word up again, you know. And one definition I found was a free, unmerited, unwarranted gift. I don't have to earn it. So it is received, you know. So I need to get to a place, and I've went out and gained weight. I gained it over a period of time. I let it sneak up on me. Next thing I know, I'm 285 pounds. I said, what the fuck happened, you know? Well, you know, get out the cups and spoons. I'm a compulsive overeater. Over any considerable period of time, I'll consider myself not an overeater. 36 years later, I've been to umpty-ump retreats. I was on a retreat committee for 9 years. I was talking to Ron about that today, and we had 6 retreats a year. And I think I've heard some of the best retreat leaders, that some of them have passed away, you know. I outlived them, you know. And I used to go up to their house and follow them and do workshops because, you know, I worshiped them and everything. And then they'd eat a pita bread or something, and I'd get disappointed. But that's where what I've come to is no human power can remove my overeating, but the grace of God can, you know. And that, I think that's the essence of the whole thing is that I can force my will on anything, and it doesn't work. And like Rex said earlier, we become quiet and let grace enter us. And that's hard for some people like me. I'm an A personality, you know. I'm yakking all the time. So for me, it's a big step to quiet down, and I find that I've been able to do that to some degree. And
very helpful, especially around the food. I've got a pretty good clean food thing. That's why I like the retreat. So I know there's abstinent food here, you know. And it's not always true in my house. So, anyway.
Let me add one thing, too. I said a little prayer before I got in that cafeteria line. Please, dear God, just let me make good choices here. That's all. Thanks.
I wanted to ask it. Have you worked the steps or are working the steps or?
Just started?
Yeah. Good. Good.
Yeah. Don't quit before the miracle happens.
Yeah. Amen. And sometimes, you know, when you're working the steps, maybe your belief in a higher power is not that strong. But, you know, all you have to have is the willingness to believe in a higher power. And I don't know how your relationship is with a higher power, but, you know, that relationship can be stronger, or you can have a spiritual awakening to working any of the steps. It can happen to step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4, step 10, step 11. And so in working the steps, we have spiritual awakenings. And that gives, when we have a spiritual awakening, that can relieve the obsession.
Yeah, when I first came into the program, I had two ladies that had really launched, and both of them are still alive, and they probably are up over 40 years now, of abstinence. And the both of them told me independently, the only thing we've done perfectly is to keep coming back.
Yeah.
And I think that's really helped me over the years, because I've gone through some tough times with the food, but just won't go away because the disease wants us out of here. And remember when Sam DeBoer led the retreat that 1 year, early years, he said that it's like a pack of coyotes, and as long as we huddle together as a flock, we're safe. But if it can cut us away from the flock and get us out there, it's going to rip us to pieces. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought of that, and I know it's the truth. And you can just keep coming back, I'm going to be okay.
Go ahead.
Hi, it's Paul.
Hi, Paul.
So, in the Bay Area right now, there's a crisis in LA. We are not getting new lifeblood. I mean, if you look around this room, we're basically a lot of old times 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever. And I live in Berkeley right now, and three fairly large meetings have closed in the past 6 months. And in San Francisco, there's a lot of talk about you just don't see newcomers coming in. Absentee requirements are being relaxed or completely ignored. There was a motion for a podcast that there be no absence requirement in order to speak at meetings, and you had people speaking at meetings that were not only not abstinence, but just basically talking inappropriately. And they are allowed now to do that because it was kind of pushed through by a group of people at Interbury. And so my question is that I know that LA is super strong. I mean, I've been down there for the conventions and whatever. I know what's going on down there for any new lifeblood, but I think it's essential that we take a look at this, you know, and start talking about it. Because if we don't get new membership, new people, I mean, the compulsive overeating is still out there. But in San Francisco, therapists are not taking OA seriously because of this. There's been a lot of talk about it in the rooms. They're not sending their people to OA anymore. They're sending them off to Epic. Or somewhere else, because OA is not being taken seriously because there are people speaking at meetings that are not abstinent. Not that they're not abstinent at the meetings, but they're doing service and they're speaking at meetings without the requirement. So my question is, what's being done down here, and are you having the same problem?
Dave, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Ryan, Apostle Reader.
My opinion on that is that it says that we're a program of attraction, not promotion. And if we're not offering something that people want, then we're not attracting them. And so by having people who aren't offering, you know, others outside the program something that could be of use to them, then of course it's going to shrink because they're going to go to other programs. And if they're going to FAA because they are offering something to attraction that people want, you know, I think that should give you pause to look at yourself and maybe through group conscience or intergroup level. But you know, I really think that it's important to maintain a good solid representation of recovery. But this is what this program is all about: good solid spiritual recovery. Then it does work when you work it.
Right. But what I'm saying to you is that the examples that are being shown are not appropriate. That the people that are speaking are not abstinent or don't need to have any requirement for abstinence. And so newcomers that are coming in are seeing these people getting up and talking and going, well, it doesn't seem like they have much serenity. And it's not a matter of attraction, it's a matter of being appropriate or not. You know? At least the way that I see it.
I think you have two different issues. I think one is relaxing abstinence requirements and then looking at success of the program by the average age. I don't think that's real. I was 47 when I came here, and I know there's a lot of other guys that came here, and we weren't youngsters when we walked in the door. And it says in the big book, we had been beaten into a state of reasonableness. So that was me and a lot of other people. So I think that you don't need to look at the average age and say, oh, we need a lot of young people in here. I think what you need is people willing to work the program.
Well, I'm talking about anybody coming in.
But it's relaxing. The problem is relaxing the standard for speaking. It's not it's not how old you are when you come in the door.
Well, I think that it's also they're having, like, for the Tuesday night, which is the main meeting in San Francisco, it's a 100-pound meeting. There are not a lot of people that have 100 pounds, you know? They're having trouble finding that, you know? And so the requirements are being relaxed that way in order to get people in there to speak. And I don't know whether that's appropriate or not.
If you're going to relax your requirements, then of course that's going to happen. I think
that's where does that stop, though?
At the group conscious level. Where else can it stop?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Don, compulsive reader. My own take on that is maybe the central office of the area would relax the rules, but if the group can have a group conscience and say, you know, to speak at this meeting you have to have such and such an abstinence and be within 10 pounds of goal weight or something like that. I go to a meeting where they do say that on Saturday morning, and they say, you know, and then once a month they have a pitch meeting and they let the newcomers come up and speak, and you know, but it's very specifically described as a pitch meeting where we are suspending the abstinence requirement for anyone to speak who wishes to, or something like that. But normally they say those who speak are requested to have, I think it's 6 months of abstinence.
Yeah.
And the group conscience can decide that. I mean, I remember I've been in AA long enough that I remember when most AA meetings had smoking. Mm-hmm. And group consciences would, various groups would say, okay, we'll allow smoking on that half of the room, or we'll only allow, you know, or we won't allow smoking at all. And it was a group by group thing before it became any kind of a local legislation. And so this may be the way it would best be dealt with for that case. That would be my suggestion.
I have a related question about that. I've been curious, when you get into meetings and you hear people pitch about, you know, just kind of describe their day and just piss them off and this and my mother this and all that kind of stuff. And I wonder, you know, when you read the format, it says that we come to share our experience, strength, and hope. I just wonder how that affects the pitches. I mean, and that kind of is like what you're talking about. People come in there and just ramble about all kinds of stuff and just pitch and complain. I mean, is there a purpose in that where it kind of cleanses your soul and okay, and go on through the day. Is that the point of having a meeting where people can do that? Or are we supposed to go in there and hear people talk about how the program and the tools and the steps have helped them stay abstinent, and this is how they run their day? I just wonder where that line is, because a lot of meetings that I go to, I hear that kind of stuff, and I figure, well, God will, it doesn't seem to affect me, but I wonder, is this really appropriate?
We've added to our pitch format that a suggestion that you take your problems to your sponsor and you share your recovery to the group.
Okay.
I think sometimes I've had things go on throughout the day where, you know, I share what's going on, but I also share my experience, strength, and hope along with that. Like, you know, on the way here, I got a speeding ticket, 90 miles per hour, whatever. Right. And I'm really pissed off about it. But, you know, I didn't overeat about it. I'm talking about it or whatever, you know. So I'm not just complaining and bitching all the whole time. So I don't know. That's my opinion. And sometimes it's okay to share a little bit of what's going on with you and a little bit of release, and also share, you know, experience and hope too. You know, maybe that, yeah, you know, I had this tragedy. My uncle died and I went to the funeral. And, you know, but I didn't have cake there. I didn't have cake and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I called my sponsor and I came to a meeting because I really needed a meeting. I needed to share that I went to go to my uncle's funeral and that was painful for me.
Well, if people continue rambling and they're just dumping in the thing, when it would be appropriate for me as an individual to hold a group conscience and say, you know, this has got to stop. I mean, when would my responsibility start as far as trying to implement that?
Ask for a steering committee meeting and address the issue at a steering committee meeting.
Right then? I mean, when somebody's pitching?
At a steering committee meeting after the meeting's over, or before the meeting's over.
To address
that's when that would be appropriate for
to have announcements. Say, I'd like to call on.
Okay, and then that would be the protocol for following the second tradition and dealing with that. Now I can bring it up, and if everybody told me to shut my mouth, then we would have a group conscience. And but that's how that would work.
You know, that's why I started the step study meeting. I'm hearing what you're saying because I got. I want to go to a meeting and hear recovery. That's why they started the maintainers meeting down there that Ron is referring to. Because I got tired of going to seeing a newcomer sitting in a meeting that just came in the door. Hi, my name's Donna. I don't know anything about this. And then somebody gets up and talks about their how much they hate their aunt. They're setting boundaries with every fucking buddy. You know, they're pissed off. And this person's going, is that what OA is?
Well,
so there's a wonderful OA handbook about how to do meetings and all that kind of stuff. And there's all kinds of ways to do that. Your Region 2 people are there to help you. They can do a traditions workshop for you. They called us up and offered that to us. There's a Region 2 Speakers Bureau. You can get a change of format in your meeting and have speakers come in. People will travel and come to San Francisco and speak. You know, that strengthens the whole thing when you get somebody. We bring a guy over once a year. We try to. He does a big book workshop, and I see people recover because they hear the truth about it. There was a guy that used to be in our group, and he moved away to. A city in New Mexico, and there were no OA meetings there. So he started meetings, and he got involved in it and changed things. It doesn't take a lot. I hear that from a lot of people. I moved to Ohio, and the program sucks back there. Well, what are you doing about it? We have a whole group of us got together, and we started a mailing list. We send our meeting director and our meeting schedule and to doctors, schools, institutions, professionals, dietitians, and they send people to the program. I talk to people all the time on the phone, and we're getting newcomers down there, but there's a lot of hardworking folks down here.
Another suggestion I had, Dave, or
go ahead.
Yeah, was that you know, I don't know if you guys have newcomer meetings. Do you have those?
Yeah,
you do.
And they're not showing up. Like even at the last Tuesday. We probably had the most we ever had. We had there were three newcomers, three or four.
Good.
But the big meeting in Berkeley is Saturday morning. Zip, 4 weeks straight, you know, and it's just the same people, you know. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. There's some recovery going on there, but it's not moving along. And the people that do come in don't come back. So it's not sticking.
There's nothing. You know, I was going to share this tomorrow, but you know, I really, this program saved my life. It did. You know, I'd be dead right now. If I wasn't dead, I'd probably weigh 375 pounds right now today, and I wouldn't be here. That's for sure. But there's nothing that pissed me off. There's like two newcomers in a meeting, and you know, the meeting ends, and everybody goes into their little cliques. And these newcomers are just standing there. They stand there for like 30 seconds and then they're out the door. Man, it's our responsibility to go up to those newcomers and say, hi, how you doing? Even if you only been in program for one day, you go up to and shake your hand. Hi, my name is Bill. How are you? Welcome. If that's all you can say, that's you're doing service and you're doing the 12-step thing right there. Or somebody walks into the room and say, hey, are you a newcomer? Come on, sit down here next to me. The meeting's about to start. Welcome. You know, my friends come up to me right after the meeting and they want to talk to me. I go, no, I can't talk to you. Look, you know, that guy's about ready to walk out the door. You know how much courage it takes to walk into an OA meeting? How low your self-esteem is? You know, you have all these obesity problems that I've had. You know, just dying. This is my last resource to come to. And then no one comes up to me and says, hi, how you doing? That's our problem. That's working the 12 step. You know, you have to, the most important person in the room is the newcomer. And what's your responsibility to recover? When the meeting has recovery and there's people recovering, and then that attracts. Like Ron said, attraction rather than promotion. And so, I mean, our job is to recover. To show the newcomer that this program works. You know, somebody saved my life. Maybe I can save somebody else's.
And I agree with you. I mean, I started when I go to the Tuesday night meeting in San Francisco, when I go in, I'm going to the newcomers meetings. Every time I will show up early and do service that way now, because I think it is very, very important that goes on. And there are three other people that show up in that meeting, one of whom's got 30 years. She's the hardcore center of OA in San Francisco, has been for a long time. Gave up her service commitment as regional because of this new thing that went on with the relaxing of the requirement for this iPod things. The podcast. She retired, and that was like a huge thing. She's been regional for, I don't know, 15 years or so, you know, and it's definitely a signal, you know. She was making, you know, a statement by kind of doing that, but I think that it's, you know, it is essential that all of us that do have long-term or recovery show up for newcomers and also try and be supportive when they come in. I agree with that. It's just getting them in the door right now. I mean, you talked about, you know, sending flyers and stuff out to doctors and stuff. We're doing that. That's done in New York and in San Francisco as well. And what's coming back is that the doctors are not referring to OA anymore because of the abstinence issues, that they're not seeing a lot of recovery in the rooms anymore. And I think that that's more the issue at hand. Not that anybody can do anything about that, but I don't know what the solution is to strengthen, you know, our numbers. And that's really what I'd like there to be more meetings happening, not less meetings happening. You know, the El Cerrito meeting, which was the closest meeting to me, it closed down 3.5 weeks ago. You know, because there wasn't, you know, attendance, and all of the books and stuff from that meeting came to the Saturday morning. It was sad, and everything had El Cerrito in it, you know? And these books are, the other two meetings that closed down, these books and all their supplies were being ported out to the other meetings. It just is, it's worrisome. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Can I just add one thing? I used to go to a big OA, a big AA meeting in Lower Manhattan that was during the week it was peopled by people who are coming to work in the financial industry, and they had three meetings a day there. And in addition to a coffee commitment and the treasurer and all that other thing, they officially had service positions as greeters at the door, so that new people coming in would feel the kind of welcome that a small meeting can give. And maybe it might be appropriate to have a service position as being the greeter, just to make sure that newcomers that come in get made to feel welcome. And because, as others have said, you know, people are scared to death, and they come with their self-esteem dragging like their ass on the ground five blocks behind them, and they feel really crummy. And if they come in and nothing happens much, and no matter what anybody says, they won't hear it. But if somebody shakes their hand and they're glad to see you and welcome, and oh, do sit down, and if there's coffee, let me get you a coffee, or if there isn't, you know, whatever. But if they're welcome, they're much more likely to come back. And we found that with the AA group. I haven't found a deficiency in San Diego OA or San Diego AA of that, because everybody's kind of just as you were saying, Ron, just, you know, or as Rex was saying, jumping up and grabbing the newcomers and trying to make them welcome. But if it's need be to have a greeter position, I remember being greeted by the greeter the first couple of times I went to that meeting, and feeling very good about it. And this was a meeting where there would be 75 or 100 people, so, you know, it was much more kind of an anonymous herd. So it was very nice that somebody greeted me.
There's a basket going around?
Could I make a comment on that?
Mm-hmm.
One trick I learned, oftentimes, when I was relatively new, I would go up to newcomers and welcome them, like he's saying, and then I'd give them my phone number and say, call me. Let me tell you, I have never gotten a call from the newcomers. I don't know about you guys. They never call you. They'll never call you. So one of the tricks I found is that you give them your number and ask for their number.
Right.
And then call
right.
them.
Right.
That impresses them. That
yeah.
impresses them.
Yeah.
This guy was fun enough to call me up and welcome me to OA and invite me back to the meeting, and whatever you're going to talk to him about. But that trick really works really well for me. You get their number. Because I tell you what, I can't remember maybe once or twice in 14 years that a newcomer has called me.
I don't want to take a lot more time on this, but my friend and I, nobody was doing anything in the office in 1999, so we asked if we couldn't be the office, you know, people, you know, and answer the phone. And I had done worked for the government, and they had a seminar on customer service, and they hired a professional person to teach us how to do customer service. And the lady said, "Well, how do you answer the phone?" And the answer was, "We don't. We have an answering machine that tells you to leave a message, and we call you back." And she said, "Well, you know, statistically, 40% of the people that call on an answering machine hang the phone up." So I took all the numbers. Nobody answered the answering machine, and I wrote down every call and every beep when they hung it up, and I got 100 calls. Guess what? 60 of them answered the phone. I mean, that was really, really true. So we went out and got an answering service with a live person who costs us $120 a month. They tell them where the meetings are, and they tell them if you want to. Well, but I'm an anorexic. Well, I got Sherry over here. You can call her. She's an anorexic. I got Lucy down here. She speaks Spanish. You know, you do all those. If you're doing all those things, you know that's very helpful. You know, and if you've done all that stuff and it doesn't work, well, then it's just they did a survey years ago, and I was shocked. You know that. I don't know if some of you around when the OA did the survey of how many, and they found out that only 5% of us stick around. You know, and that's it's for people that wanted any. You know, if we've done everything we talked about here, you've done all you can. Welcome the newcomer, call them on the phone. I found it very rewarding to answer the phone. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do something out of that.
Yeah, I've got pulled one on here that really resonates with me, and it's what do you do to deal with cravings? And you know, that's really interesting to me too, because for a long time I thought that cravings were a bad thing, and that but what I've come to realize just within this past year or so that since this is a spiritual program, that you know God doesn't make junk, and God created cravings. And that what I've come to realize is that whenever I feel a craving, it's really God tapping me on the shoulder saying, I want your attention. I want to love you. I want to talk to you. And what was happening to me is all this time is that whenever, you know, he'd be tapping me on the shoulder wanting my attention for a craving, I'd always go, what, where, you know, and I'd, oh, food, must be food, you know, oh, food, sex, alcohol, something else. But it wasn't until I realized that, no, the craving that I'm feeling is actually, I'm not hungry, I'm not really, you know, thirsty. And so what it is the craving is really, you know, God trying to get my attention, wanting to come in with me, wanting to love me. You know, one of the things that it says in step three is to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Well, what is the care of God? You know, I've talked with Gil a lot about that, you know, and you know, the care of God, to me, I finally came to realize is that it's like a mother's love, and how that's the unconditional nurturing, and that's what God wants to do with me, is the unconditional nurturing. I didn't get it at home from my real mother, because all she did was she just cooked and baked, and that was her way of expressing love through food. But and that's where I got off base. That's how I confused love with food and eating. But that's how I deal with craving. Whenever I feel a craving coming on, my first thought is food. After relying upon my second thought, which is, oh, God wants to talk to me and find out what that's all about.
I got one here that says, how do you, can you talk about willingness? What if you're not willing? Well, it says how it works, you know, you have to be willing to go to any length. And it's the desperation of the dying, I guess, that created the willingness in me, because I knew I was fooling myself. I have to include my AA experience, and I hope you all don't mind, but I was miserable. It took me 3 years to get sober. I came in and I saw all this stuff about God, and I heard about this sponsor, and you know, I'm much too intelligent to have to appoint somebody a micromanager and do all this stuff that they said. And so, all right, I'll go to meetings, and yeah, they said don't take the first drink, so I didn't for a while, and I went to meetings pretty regularly at the begining, and then less and less, and then I thought, well, I could probably take one drink. And I did, and I didn't explode into a raging drunk immediately. It took a little time for it to build up. But there I was a year and a half later after I'd taken this first drink, and I realized that I was just as miserable and more unhappy and more depressed than ever I was before. And I thought, you know, whatever that, and I had this wonderful inspiration, which I consider a message from my higher power, and that was something came from inside of me that said, you know, you don't have to be here anymore. You don't have to be this miserable. You may not believe everything that they're doing, but the truth of the matter is, you're drunk and they're sober. So whatever power there is there, it's keeping them sober, and you better just goddamn well get your ass in there and do it, even if you don't entirely believe it. And so when the time came for me to face the fact that I was, you know, I had this big pot of stew, and it had pasta in it, which I don't eat very much at all anymore. But I had this thing that was supposed to last for 5 days that I, you know, I polished it off in two days, and I ran for more food in all directions, and I was going more and more for food. I thought, you know, there's only one person here who's being fooled. And so at that point, I became willing. And I guess the willingness is, how much do I have to suffer? And I know that I'm going to suffer again if I deviate from the plan.
And we're all here because we want that. It's as somebody says, I wished I wanted to get abstinent enough to really get abstinent. A lot of people kind of wish they wanted to enough to actually do it. Well, my recommendation is try it for one day. Just sometimes I have to try it for one day. There's something in the refrigerator that I would really like to have, and I think, well, maybe put it in tomorrow's food plan if it's an appropriate thing, but it's just I've got other things in there. Put it in, you can have that tomorrow. Or work a plan that will include it for today, or something like that. But just, I mean, the planning the menus has been a real lifesaver for me. And I can tell you what I had on, you know, July 13th of 2008. I could go home and look it up in my day planner, because it's written in my day planner. And the willingness, and really it's like praying for the gift of abstinence. Praying for the grace. Dear God, just give me the grace to be willing. Give me the grace to be abstinent. And it's a gift. It really is a gift. It's not an achievement. I achieved a lot of diets and I achieved a lot of weight loss, and then it all came right back because I thought I had achieved something and now I could relax and now I could eat normally. And that was always my problem with my idea of eating normally. Duh. Anyway, that's my take on that one.
Can I call for a group question? Would it be okay if I close the door because the dog's still barking?
Sure.
I can't
even. My question says, are there any OA slogans or ideas? Are there any OA slogans or ideas you hear in the rooms that you have found harmful to your recovery? If so, why? Yes, there are. I'm not too sure about slogans, but ideas. And I think some of it, and this is my personal. I think the OA literature, I love the OA literature, and I've read it and I've used it. But in some of it, it says that these are suggestions only. Boy, I hate that. You know, I really do. Like, well, you know, the steps are suggested. I'm not sure if it says that, but, you know, it says a lot of stuff that the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Yes, that is true. But it is a damn 12-step program. It is. It's a 12-step program. That's what it is. There's you can add an A to anything, and it's still a 12-step program. You work the steps. The only step that changes is step one. I'm powerless over food. I'm powerless over gambling. I'm powerless over my sex and love addiction. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. So it's all the same, but it's a spiritual malady. So do I have a problem? Yeah, I have a real hard problem when you're telling somebody that's why I like the Big Book of Alcoholics, where it has must. This must be done, and it has clear cut directions. It says on awakening, we ask God to direct our thinking. It doesn't say on awakening, if you want, ask God for directions. It doesn't say that. It's very clear cut. And so we're giving the wrong message to people. And I, you know, I really find that, you know, there's a lot of psychology going on in the meetings and stuff, that my therapist said this and my therapist said that. And you know, we're not talking about, I mean, and that's great. I don't know, maybe that helps some people. And I do therapy. I do. I have a therapist that I see every week, and that's great. And I think he's helped me out quite a bit. But I mean, this is my spiritual program. So it's a spiritual program, and that I need to rely on God to help me from compulsive overeating. And how do I accomplish that relationship with God is through the steps. And so, yeah, I do have a slogan. I don't know, maybe some other people can answer this. Are there any OA slogans or ideas in the rooms that you guys find harmful? I don't know. That's my
take. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I have found a couple of times that what was discussed about people going on and on about, you know, things that were really pretty much off message. I got invited to go to a long time ago, I got invited to go to a little meeting out pretty far from home. It was about 20 miles away. I went out there and I spoke, and they were very nice. It was mostly ladies, and they were very nice, so I went a couple of times. And then I started, I thought, well, I'll go a couple of times more. And there was this one woman that would, I mean, I think she was, I think, I'm not sure she was a little nuts, but they would let her talk, and we would hear a travelogue about her and her husband's vacation. It had nothing to do about anything. And I thought, you know, this is bullshit. What am I taking a 35-mile round trip to go hear this woman go on and on about her husband's vacation and things, and they're not shutting her up, and they're not discussing any kind of recovery. So I just didn't go back. And
vote with your feet.
Yeah, it didn't harm my program to the extent that I started eating over it. I just thought, screw this, I'm not doing it anymore.
Okay, my question is, what was the toughest part of your food plan to accept? Well, I'm Daryl, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Daryl.
And my plan of eating not only is about the food, but it's the way I eat the food. And I think that the toughest part for me has been about the way I eat the food, not so much what the foods are. And no distracted eating. I can't, my old binge behavior was Saturday and Sunday during football season, would you get up early, start eating, and watch television until the recap at 11 o'clock at night. Yeah. And I would use that as an excuse not to do things like mow the lawn or do yard work. No, I want to watch a football game, and I can, as long as I'm watching football game, I can eat. And I used to do a lot of eating in my car. Don't do that anymore. And so some of these didn't come easy, you know. And then I was sitting down at the table to eat. Don't eat standing up, you know. This was tough stuff for me. I never did things like that. And one of the things, my big binge food when I was in the disease was sandwiches. That I was in a family where I was being watched all the time about what I ate. I was the only fat person in the family. My mom, my dad, my brother and sister were all skinny. And so I had to sneak everything I got. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom, so that made it really tough. And so I had to really get creative. And so one of the things that I would do is I'd come home from school, and I'd know as soon as I opened the door she wasn't home. I'd head for the kitchen, and I'd do a line of sandwiches. I'd make about four or five sandwiches, put them all together, put everything away, close the door in case I had to run for it, and then I'd just devour it. If she had not home yet, I'd do another line. So one of the things that when I came here, I realized that I couldn't eat sandwiches anymore. So there was a time in my recovery when I was eating bread, but like if I ordered, and I haven't made a sandwich for myself in 25 years. That's something I don't get to do. And I make sandwiches for my kids, I make their lunches, but I don't make them for myself. But I would go to a restaurant and they might have a sandwich on the menu, and I would order it, but I'd eat it with a fork and a knife and cut it up and I would eat it, but not like a sandwich. And so it was crazy things like that. It wasn't so much that it was the food itself or the plan of eating itself that was really the toughest thing for me. And I developed a real, I don't know where this came from, this is a screwy one, I wish the hell I hadn't come up with it, or God hadn't come up with it. If I drop something on the floor, that's God telling me I'm not supposed to have it. And I could throw the fucker away. You know, and sometimes I drop some pretty damn nice stuff. especially since I had my stroke about a year and a half ago, I'm a little clumsier than I used to be. I don't like that part. Anyway, that's it.
Thanks. Hey, Dave, the postal reader, I just want to say,
I have a dog that won't pick things up off the floor after you put it in his, you know, give it to him. If he drops it on the floor, he makes you pick it up and eat it so he can eat it. I've never seen a dog like that. Nothing to do with what we're talking about. The willingness.
That's better than we do.
So what's wrong with you? I think I like the question about what happens if you're, you know, you pray, you know, you want willingness but you're not willing. And I think that prayer and the leaders talked about that today is so important for me to pray for willingness, and somebody needs to say that works because it does work for me. You know, that's the only thing that's worked for me is when I say the third step prayer. And I really mean the motivation eventually turns out to be so that it would benefit others, you know, to help me recover so I can help somebody else. And that's probably the essence of the founding program, you know, that we learned from the AA folks. It's still good today, you know. I find it really beneficial over the years. When I came into OA, there was a friend of mine that worked in we had the same locker next to each other in the shop. And he had a picture of this finger coming out of the cloud. And it was getting ready to thump this guy in the head, this big hand. You know. And that was Ray Gibson's concept of God. And I remember looking at that and I go, you got that right, Ray. God's going to fuck me. And I came into the program that way. God had already fucked me. I had fallen from grace. I heard that saying. Probably at a church somewhere, you know, he's fallen from the grace of God. And so coming from there to where I'm at is a long way. And people, I had the damnedest sponsor, and I said, boy, Peterson's going to kick my ass, man. He wants me to sit down and bring my legal tablet, you know. And he would, and he, you know what the guy did? He had me sit down and write down 10 assets. I couldn't do it. I can tell you what a lousy son of a bitch and worthless bastard Dave Burke was, but I couldn't write down an asset. And he opened the big book up that we're talking about, and it says no inventory is written entirely in red ink. You know, and there's some stock in trade there. All the cans aren't dented. There's some good green beans in there. That's important. It's been important to me being an adopted kid not feeling I was worth a shit. For somebody to sit down and point out what was valuable about Dave Burge is important. And I do that with people I sponsor and they don't like it. You know, that's not the program. I want to work my character defects, you know. Well the character defects are let go so we can build character. That's what it says in the book. So to some degree people have helped me to build whatever character I have. So I think it's a very positive program. It has been for me. I don't think of myself at all. I wouldn't relate to the people that I related to before I came in the program. I don't know who they are. I'm different because of people. I'll just say, I don't mean embarrassing, but Rex is the real thing. I go up to him after me and say, hey, let's go have lunch. If you can't, I can't. I'm working with somebody. He's the real deal, man. Now, I'm proud to know him. You know, I've had to review my concept of God and improve it. You know, He does care for me. He is always present with me. I have to reaffirm these things all the time. And that's a long way for me to come from the guy that's going to thump me in the head. Thank you.
When you mentioned about character defects, what came to my mind was something that Chris was sharing in our small group this morning about character defects. And do you mind sharing with the group what you shared with us?
I just said that every defect we have is an asset until we take it too far. Anger is caring.
Instincts
and fear. We care too much. We get angry. We don't care at all. We're apathetic. We're used to being people of extremes, many of us, and to live in that middle way is the foreign area that we can get used to if we choose. That's just one example. But every defect of character was an asset at one time until we went haywire and we took it too far.
Yeah. Very good.
Thanks for sharing that.
Anything else? Are we done?
Maybe we can have. Should we go to
the leader?
Well, I don't know. I mean, okay, so it's 9:45. Maybe we can go to 10 with some open sharing if you guys want, or close,
right?
Any vote on open sharing for 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay? So, and I don't think the leaders need to share anymore because we've already shared. So, the floor is open.
Steve, can you over here?
Yes,
thank you. This is going to be a very serious share. Pre-warned guests. Gil shared this joke with us a few years back. He's not here. We went to talk to him earlier this morning. My daughter was high. He's on the East Coast. He usually comes in for security. I think it's probably 23 or 25 or something like that. But he wanted to make sure that he said hi. And this is the story he told a few years back. We've got enough newcomers, I think, that it's okay to share it. Compulsive overeater walking on the beach and he sees a bottle, and so he picks it up and he rubs it, looks kind of like a genie bottle. He rubs on it and the genie pops out and says, "I'll give you two wishes." And of course, right away it's resentful. Three wishes, two wishes. Let's go make them. So the compulsive overeater thinks a second and says, "Well, I want it." Giant pizza, all the different flavors and kinds of toppings that you could possibly ever have. And, every time, that I take a piece, I want it endless. I want it to come. That piece fills in, so, the pizza the size of the table, and compulsive overeater is dancing around, prancing, he's eating that pizza, and he takes one piece, and it fills in, there it is, magically fills in, and he runs around the other side, gets another piece, and that fills in, and goes around to the other side, takes another piece, and that goes in. And after, 10, 15, 20 minutes, Gene says, what else do you want? And he says, I want one of these.
I'm Tim,
also over
here.
Hi, Tim.
We talked earlier today about relapse and when the drinks goes in. And having just relapsed recently, I want to share specifically for me that honesty was really the thing that screwed me up. Being honest with myself, being in Ohio, being honest with my sponsor about what it was and wasn't eating. That was really key for me in terms of there were a whole bunch of places along the way that we talked about. And I completely agree that you lose your way before you pick up. And there were plenty of places along the way that I could have been honest. I could have done something different if I'd opened up and shared about what was going on with me. I see a psychiatrist every once in a while. I hadn't seen him for several months. And I came in and said, "Oh, I relapsed, and my wife's leaving me." And I thought, "Well, why didn't you fucking call me?" Because we were having a hard time, and it was going. Because I've had this whole horrible thing going on in the office, and I hadn't been seen for months. Not that he would have fixed it, but, I didn't use the tools I had, and I wasn't honest with the people that could help me. And that eventually led me to do. So I just want to put that out there, that for me, it's real important to be honest about what's going on with me, because I can't take the right actions if I'm not being honest. I don't have an accurate perception of the world if I'm not being honest. I mean, they say you can't be honest with other people if you can't be honest with yourself. And I spent a long time, being 360 pounds, thinking that was just fine. I really did think it was just fine. And so that's been real important to me.
Thanks.
Thanks
for sharing.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Don, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Don.
I want to thank everybody for coming here. It helps me a lot. I was sharing with some guys earlier today, and I thank John Cave over there about it. It was something that he wrote in one of the email blasts that you guys all got about that, about coming to the retreat, if you have a problem with food, or if you have a problem with your life. And I think I've come to understand, finally, after a long period of time, that the 12 steps of this fellowship gives me the ability to get a better life. You know, wherever my head goes, you know, my appetite follows. And admittedly, you can't preach sobriety from the bar stool, but I'll try to challenge that at any time. So, you know, I see the program as being my chance to repair a life that's sort of busted. You know, it happens. You know, everybody's got their stuff. I have my feelings about why I am the way I am. Started back when maybe 1 year old or something. But the issue is that I have a problem with my food. You know, one time somebody said that if something causes a problem, it has become the problem. You know, so maybe my overeating wasn't originally the issue. There are other issues behind. But over the years, my mind and my body has defaulted to solving those problems by compulsive overeating. And then, in fact, that creates other problems. But I do believe deeply, deeply in my heart that if I work the 12 steps that we inherited, what a wonderful inheritance from Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a chance for me to get a better life. When I get a better life, I don't have to worry about the food, because the food does it. It falls into place. Admittedly, 7-8 years ago, when my life was real, real shitty, because it comes in cycles. I wish my life was always great, and that just hasn't happened in 62 and a half years, and I don't suspect it's going to happen again. It'll have its ups and downs. My ego will tell me, no, it should always be perfect. It's not the way it is. But the steps give you that chance, to do it. I don't like being overweight. If I absolutely, if you hook me up to a polygraph, I have no problem weighing what I weigh. I'm sort of wasting some nice fellowship, a little social club. But I don't like being the way I am. I don't like being the way. The first man I ever met in Overeaters Anonymous, who has since passed away, said, he says, just strip down naked. Get a full length mirror in your house, and you got one. Look face on, turn 180 degrees, look to your side, and ask yourself the question, what do I know about food, and what do I know about taking care of myself? And if you truthfully answer yourself, say, oh, I might want to learn. Well, maybe you are. I'm not. I can't look at that mirror myself and look at folds and flaps and say, Jesus, we are magical. Lift this up and wash the soap out. When I was a higher weight than I am today, I don't like the fact that I almost dislocate my shoulder in cleaning my ass. There's nothing nice about that. And no matter what my ego tells me, it can't justify that. But I do know that the problems that I have in my life can be taken away. It can be put into isolation or frozen in time by practicing the steps of the program. And then I don't eat the food. Then I can use food as fuel and replacement parts. I sincerely feel that I have a bazillion recoveries in myself. For me to say, and some people, but it's just my own personal slant, for me to say, well, I didn't know I have another recovery left in me, but always another relapse, that just hurts me. I have to believe, really, really, really believe that my ego doesn't let me do that, And the only thing that knocks my ego into place is, in fact, the concept of a God, which, in the way, I was raised by pretty agnostic parents, but to have a concept of God that says it can happen, It happened 7-8 years ago, dropped a slug away, I felt great. People would say, and it fell off of me. I mean, I got like 4 or 5 pounds a week. It was crazy. And people would ask me, and I would pompously say, I remember, and it was just full of shit, man. It was only through the grace of God and the power of the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'd almost feel like saying, get me a scotch, That's what I wanted to hear. But, sooner or later, I believed the crap that my mind was telling me. So I didn't believe it. And the weight comes back off. But, I have a chance. And, every time I've had a major difficulty in my life, and I've had a slug in the last couple of years, the steps have got me out of it. But I had to work them. And, why didn't I do it 7, 8, 10, 15, 16, 18 years ago? Maybe I just wasn't ready for it. Maybe I wasn't ready to really understand it.
or maybe this is what it took for me to get here. And that's the most important thing. Number one, I didn't die. And number two, I didn't stop coming back. Because either one of those things are going to screw my chance for recovery. But it's a phenomenal fellowship. Most of this, yesterday and today, I was feeling really in the dumps. Really, really sad, really depressed. Got a lot of stuff to feel sad and depressed about. But you know what? You guys give me the chance to get better. Every one of you. Whether you're a go away or just fucking feel like you're a million miles away from it. You give me a chance. Gives me a chance to get out of myself. Gives me a chance, God bless it, I'm not saying anything, to get away from my family. You know, four kids, 11 grandchildren, a wife. It gives me a sister. It gives me a chance to get away. You know, the 12 and 12 says there are times when we need to take a retreat. You know, and like, Avery was mentioning to me, it's a great phrase, and I remember a guy saying to me a long time ago, you know, surrender means only one thing, going to the winning side. And why would I want to go to the winning side? Unless that little fucker in my head, you know, I start believing that voice. The voice will probably always be there. You know, I never had cancer. I don't know what it's like to have cancer in remission, you know. But, you know, it's sort of, I think it might be the same way. He says, you know what? The disease can be put into remission. And when it gets put into remission, man, make food choices just right on the mark, you know? You know. But it's also hard to make good choices or to work the program for me if I'm eating like a pig. So, you know, it's a chicken and egg deal. It's a tough nut. It's a hard program. if it was easy, this room would have, you know, it would be like one of those you know, buy a house for $15 type of things on TV late at night. You know, but it works. It always has worked. It always will work if I choose to work it. But once again, my thanks to you guys all for being here. Because if it wasn't for you, you know, I wouldn't be here. There's absolutely no question in my mind. I come up with a million more reasons why I should stay with my wife and stay with my kids and stay with my grandchildren. The only reason I came here is there's a chance that I can get better. And if there's a chance, and I don't like being the way I am today, and I know there's a way to get better, you know, then I do. So a miracle happens, and every one of you guys are a miracle. So God bless you all for being here.
Thanks,
Tom. My name is Leo, both of over you.
Hi, Leo.
I'm just coming from downtown with Tom and say, you know, I can't see where proper portion is. You know, I can't see that. Like, I was thinking about this every time I go in the cafeteria today. You know, that no matter how much I intend it, because I know about what 6 ounces of something is. You know, but I guarantee you, I don't get to hit the mark very often. You know, and I was trying, you know. But I always managed that dipper was a little bit too much. And if I have a excuse, you know, to eat more, you know, then boy, it's instantaneous. You know, I got one piece of meat, and I know that was probably a little bit more than, you know, what my, you know, weighed 6-8 ounces would be. But Mike, he got two. So then, you know, I get to have two. Now, his, you know, he has a different food plan than I do. But he got two, so I get two, right? You know? Well, I only get a little two, maybe, you know, that much. But still, you know, it's like permission to, you know, and so. And I don't know how to be, you know, down the road when I get absent like you guys. But right now, I can't do portions. I mean, I have to weigh measure, you know, because it's, you know, my brain doesn't work in terms of portions. You know, it just doesn't work, you know. And that's what I have to do.
Thanks.
I'm Rob.
I'm Rob.
I just want to say, I mean, obviously this is my first retreat. I hope it's not my last one here. But I had this great week. You know, it's been an absent weekend, so that's the number one thing. I haven't had a chance to sit down with everybody and get to know. I mean, how would I do that? And if I skip all the meetings and just have this item talk to you one at a time, maybe we could do that. But anybody that I've had a chance to stop and talk to, it's been really wonderful. I mean, in fact, there's what, 38 guys here, and there's not one of you that I'm going home and thinking, you know, that guy's I'm really looking forward to phone calls and to being more in touch with some of you guys, and hope that you will call me. And if you're ever in the D.C. area and need to get to a meeting, please don't be afraid to call. Because, you know, the one thing I've learned, especially here, is, you know, that we are all in this together. Whether you've been at it for 22 years or, like myself, been in and out, and struggling, and having relapse, and having periods of absence, you know, we still need each other. And I know I need you guys, and I've been really, really grateful for the whole experience. I've had some nice quiet time by myself, too, which I rarely give myself at home. It's like, you know, I need some quiet time, but I got to do the laundry, and I got to walk the dog, and I got to go to the store, and I got to, you know, it's like all of a sudden there's a leave. And just to be able to relax, and then, you know, be able to go up there with someone and say, hey, I need a ride. And, you know, 20 minutes later, somebody was saying, hey, I can take you right back that way. You know, so, you know, remembering to ask for help and trusting God, you know, I knew I'd get a ride back somehow. You know, even if I had to go rent a car, I could always go rent a car. But it was just an act of trust that, you know, my needs are being provided for. And this weekend has been just an example of that for me, from everything from being able to afford to come out here to just, you know, all the little things. And I'm just really, really grateful to you guys. The guys who put this together and the guys who just keep coming on these retreats. We used to have a men's retreat that I went probably 4 or 5 times. And finally, guys, because people got tired of doing the work. You know, they didn't want to have to find a place. They had all kinds of like things that they were wrong with that, but they didn't want to do anything to fix it. You know, and I miss it. I miss the of men in recovery. So I'm really grateful. You guys got, you may see problems with yourself, but you guys got a really good thing going on here, and great to be able to be a part of that.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Thank you. I got one last thing I'd like to share, and that's, I'm Ryan Kapustin, a reader. And some of the times that, you know, I hear some of these voices in the committee in my head that keep trying to put me down, keep trying to tell me, you know, who the hell do I think I am? I'm just this worthless piece of shit. And I keep getting those voices, and they've been around for a long time. And I had a sponsor that gave me an affirmation to counter those that I've used quite a bit. And the affirmation is that just for today, I let go of all those sick illusions that I have about myself. Let my Father in heaven tell me who I really am, a beautiful, precious child of God, who deserves all the love and happiness that I can hold. I got that from Terry.
I'd like to add one thing. There's one person up here that is missing, that's not up here, that's missing, that's Irving Goldworm. He passed away this past year, and he led this retreat on 2 occasions. And this is a man that gave a lot of service in his time, and I think you should remember him kindly. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. Shall we run? So, next thing for us is 7:15 meditation with Rex.
Yes.
Right. In the chapel.
Yep.
And then don't forget, dinner's at 8:00. Right. You got all this recovery. Don't forget to eat breakfast. You know, that was close.
Don, would you like to lead us in a closing prayer of your church?
Sure. After a few minutes of silence, thinking about how we can just take better care of ourselves by giving up to a power greater than ourselves. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. It'll work if it's worth it.
Sucks if you don't.
Yeah.
All right.
What's going on with the church? Hey, John, you going to turn this off or what?
I don't know.
Stop. John Kay.
Stop.